This is the third reel of a taped interview with Peter Gray in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 1st of 4th, 2002, the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Peter, tell us about your position at the time when you were to be in Batavia. When were you there initially?
That would have been around about the 17th, 18th of February, as I remember.
What would have been your duties around that time?
As far as the ship was concerned, we sailed from. We went into Tanjung Priok. And we stayed there for a day, and during that time we had an air raid came through. They came at fairly high level, but we also had a high angle facility with our 6-inch guns, and we put paid to their air raid by putting some of these shells up and near the anti-aircraft shells, and they of course they make a hell of a bang when they get up in the air and go off, and it kept their aircraft way up in the air, and it it was a bit of a deterrent. But they hit oil tanks, etc., which are very close to the Tanjung Priok wharves, and there was sort of smoke and that sort of thing. But whilst we were there during this air raid, we had the Yarra, HMAS Yarra, alongside us, and one of their gunners in his zeal to try and shoot one of these planes down, finished up the, put one of his bullets through the wing of our aircraft, and that sort of buggered that up a bit. That was to have repercussions later on, that that particular item. But we left shortly after, and went off down to Surabaya, where we picked up all the other part of the fleet.
You would leave on the 24th. As I understand, you hadn't had any real contact with the rest of ADDAB at all.
Not to that point, no. Now we picked up with them down at Surabaya. It was quite an impressive looking fleet, really, but
this was to cause problems, I understand, the fact that you hadn't been able to really coordinate yourselves.
That's right, yeah. The Australians and English, that involved the Exeter, which was a heavy cruiser, and the British destroyers, Encounter, Electra, and Jupiter, etc., and the Perth. They had all worked under similar situations and under similar commands and used similar methods. The Americans were slightly different, but of course they weren't. We hadn't worked with them before, and the Dutch were something entirely new to us completely. So there hadn't been these settling down cruises that allow you to coordinate all the problems that are likely to occur, and methods of signalling, and codes and that sort of thing, which made it quite difficult.
Tell us what your duties were up for the first 2 or 3 days before the Battle of the Java Sea would occur on 27th.
Well, we went out first of all and to try and pick up this this Japanese fleet, which wasn't a hell of a problem because we found them quite easily.
Well, there's a feeling, though, that that's what your idea was. That this was no longer textbook stuff. You actually sort of...
That's right. You're into the real stuff, yeah. That's right.
How was that sort of making itself known amongst the sailors on board?
Oh, the skipper told us before we... after we left Surabaya that we were out looking for the Jap fleet. And that we would undoubtedly be involved in it.
So how was the atmosphere like on board?
Oh, quite like any time you go into a fight, it's you feel pumped up, is the expression that's used these days. But quite ready for it, and the quicker you can get on with it, the better it is, sort of thing. Because standing around, tension builds up, and it's not so good.
How well prepared did you personally feel in relation to what you might come against?
Oh, quite confident. And this is the thing, is that you have such enormous confidence in the ship and in the personnel that's on board that you almost feel almost invincible, that you're not going to you're prepared for problems, but you're not going to really worry about the problems because the whole thing has been tried and tested, and it's proved to be okay. So you've got that sort of super confidence, if you like, in the ship.
So what was the situation on the 26th and then into the 27th when you were to come across the fleet?
There were no problems as far as we could see. When we came across the fleet, that was when the problems occurred, because we were kept out, was out of our range. We had an extreme range of 24,000 yards, but you couldn't be accurate at 24,000 yards. You had to rely a little bit on luck there. 18,000 yards, yes, you could be spot on. But of course, the bigger ships, the 8-inch cruisers, they've got a range of 32,000 yards. Well, there's a big difference there, and for a long time you get pasted before you can start to reply. But having a skipper that was well versed in all this sort of thing, he was able to keep us out of trouble, although we were being ranged upon, and what they do is watch the fall of shells and then make a move when they feel confident that the next one might have our name on it. And because they're so good, so expert at this sort of thing, we came through that battle without a scratch.
What was your initial realisation that you were in a fight, you're in combat?
Well, we were closed up at action stations pretty well from the time we left Surabaya, and it was only just that you were at sort of relaxed action stations. You were there, but you had to be ready to jump into it straight away. But the feeling was that again, this confidence that you've got everything's going your way, and that the leave it to the skipper. He knows what's going on, and as long as we do our job, everything's fine.
So the battle, I understand, was fought in two stages, the afternoon and evening.
Evening, yeah.
Mm. What were your experiences and your involvement in the afternoon phase of that?
Well, from where we were down below, a lot of it, you couldn't see it, of course. There was a lot of noise from the ship screws, and you could feel the ship turning and twisting and weaving and all this sort of thing. But there were no the guns were firing because we were pushing this ammunition up all the time, so you know, the guns were firing, we knew that and we could hear that, but everything else was all right, so until you run into trouble, of course, and then just keep going with the whole thing. But once the bun fight had started, the ship was moving a lot quicker. You could sense the changes in direction, etc., were a lot more frequent, and also you could pick up the change in speed. If there was a big change in speed, you could pick all that up, so you carried a bit of a picture of it anyway. But
once you had obviously it started to engage, what were the feelings that you then had? Did things start to calm down? Were you keyed up even more?
No, you for a while, of course, the once we'd got into, or the skipper had taken us into range where we could start and hit back, then of course you're that blasted busy pushing these shells up that you didn't have much time to think about too much at all until it started to ease off, and you sat down and of course you speculated amongst yourselves as to what had happened or what was likely to have happened. But of course in the meantime we found out afterwards that there was a hell of a lot happened that time. And then of course we ran into the evening bit of it, and the bit that I spoke about earlier about the shell going through the wing of the plane, that was one of the problems that was apparent at the time. They had a spotter plane sitting up way out of range, but being able to spot and relay to the Jap commander what each ship was doing. So of course he had a lot of prior information, because all these things are fought out in a lot of cases beyond your horizon. The fact that the plane that we had could have been used was quite a factor, but she was only an old Passer's duck, but very reliable in the air, and also had we been able to have that ability to spot and to see, it would have it could have made things quite a lot better for us.
Presumably later on when you were heading towards the Sunda Straits.
Yes, well, that was night time, so that wouldn't have... Although when we were heading back to Tanjung Priok, of course that was all night time stuff, but we were also proceeding pretty quickly at that time, because we didn't quite know what had gone on.
Had you been aware, for instance, of the ships that had been sunk on the Java Sea battle incident?
Not till afterwards did we know the full extent of it, but we knew a lot of them had been sunk, because when we came out of it there was only two of us left, and that was fairly traumatic. And when you consider that we'd started off with what the De Ruyter and Java, the Houston, the Exeter, and us as well, and that plus all the four American destroyers, three British destroyers, and four Dutch destroyers, and there weren't too many of them floating around.
So you would have made it back with the Houston to Batavia. Tell us about that experience, getting back to Batavia.
Well, that after we decided to withdraw from the battle at the Java Sea, it was a case of liberty split as far as we could get to get back to Tanjung Priok to pick up ammunition if we could. Because by that time we had used up a large quantity of our ammunition, and we were down to quite a small amount of ammunition that was left, and that included the 4-inch guns as well. They were quite well down on it. We hadn't used the torpedoes up until that time, but yes, we had to get to, or we were on our way back to Batavia mainly to get fuel, because that was as short as anything. And when we got back into Tanjung Priok, because it was quite chaotic on the waterfront, there were these big long storehouses they call go downs on the waterfront, and they were just about to be wrecked and blown up and all sorts of things, just so that the Japs didn't get hold of them. And of course where they had bombed these oil tanks when we were there previously, there was still burning and a hell of a lot of smoke and that sort of thing from around there, because the fires were still going. But there were some troops on the wharf, and that's what they called out to us. You want anything, come and get it, because they were going to blow it up. But there was nothing much that there was any good apart from things like a case of whiskey or that sort of thing. That was fine for those who could weren't on watch or could get over and get it. But the idea was, or that we were to, once we left Tanjung Priok, was to go around to the south end of the island, or southern end of the island, to Tillichap, pick up troops and anybody that was there, and then take them back to Fremantle. That was the order of things. But of course, it never quite got that way.
The general feeling that you were going to head out of the area.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Hopefully get back to Australia.
Yeah.
How was that seen by the rest of the troops on board?
Well, it was a logical thing to do. That was, you can only get so many blows in as far as fighting an enemy in superior numbers is concerned. And they had numbers in vast quantities, and that was the thing that was proving our downfall, just the sheer numbers of them. So it was
given your experience at the Java Sea, how they were obviously proving to be a formidable foe as well.
Yes, yeah, yeah. That was perhaps a bit of an eye-opener that the ships they had were exceptionally good, and their command was obviously pretty well right up to it as well. But when you think back, of course, to the fact that at the end of the First War, in the First World War, they were allies of Britain, and they had picked up a lot of their expertise and their shipbuilding expertise again from the English people. So, although they were perhaps shoddy in a lot of other things, there was nothing wrong with their navy. It was quite good. They knew how to do it, and they'd been taught how to do it, and they'd done it well.
You've been delayed in Batavia, and it wasn't until later in the evening that you were able to actually head off. Can you tell us what the feeling was like as you did head off?
A little bit apprehensive, but no worries. There was nothing in the... no problems as far as we were concerned to get out and go through Thunder Straits.
The fleet was way out of the way, as was understood.
Well, that's right, yeah, yeah.
Where had that come from? Where had that information come from?
That's from Dutch intelligence. That's where it came from. That the straits were clear and that there was nothing within, it was 50 mile or something of the place. So there was plenty of time for us to get through.
I had left and gotten through, I understand.
Yeah. Had we gone immediately, not stopped at Tanjung Priok, possibly we might have got straight through. But having been delayed that bit of time proved a bit fatal as far as we were concerned.
So you're heading out of Batavia at about 9 p.m.
Oh.
What was to happen next, as far as you're aware?
Well, the skipper came on the blower and said that we were heading out and going around to Chilichap, pick up troops and anybody else that was there, and then back to Australia. Where we were going to land back in Australia, I wasn't quite sure whether it was Darwin or Fremantle or that sort of thing, but that was as far as we were told, that we were going around to Chilichap to pick up these troops.
So what was the thing that you heard next? I mean, as I understand, it was approaching 11 o'clock when the enemy ship were sighted. What was the feeling then in relation to what was going to take place?
Oh, again, another bit of a scrap. That was it, and that was the attitude that was there. You know, whatever comes, we can have a go at it, and we've got a good ship, we've got speed, and we've got everything else that we can use for manoeuvring and keep on top of this thing. And there were two of us. And we were quite capable of looking after ourselves, sort of thing. The only problem was that the Houston, of course, had a defective gun at the on her stern, or a defective turret, which was out of action. But that left her vulnerable from aft, but. As long as you're going up the blokes, not too much worry about what's down the back.
So what were you hearing in relation to what was going on from about 11 o'clock on the 28th?
Enormous noise. Of course, we were, as we found out later, we were tearing around and around in ever-decreasing circles, this sort of thing, and firing, and it was red hot until we had nothing left. We'd sent the last of the shells up, so it was there were a few practice projectiles left there, but you know, unless you can get a turret tip on somebody, they're useless things because they're only a lump of steel flying through the air. Certainly they do a lot of damage, or can do a lot of damage, but of course if they haven't got the explosive in them, then they don't do an awful lot of good.
Mm. What was the feeling then when you realised you were sort of running out of shells?
It's starting to get a little bit hairy, but again, you know, particularly when you can't see it, and you only get the occasional bit of information. Again, you rely so much on everybody else that that reliance comes in.
What sort of information would you be getting at a point like this from above?
Very scanty. I think from memory there were a couple of things came down that we just sank a couple of ships or you know, that sort of thing. But that's about all that you got, because everybody was so very busy doing their own job that there wasn't time to think too much about what was going on. And that was a very hairy hour, I can tell you. That was really flat out stuff.
It was 11:50. You were to be hit by the first of three or four torpedoes, I understand. Mm. Tell us about that experience.
Well, when that happened, of course, that you get this enormous jolt to the ship. We were down aft. I was in the shell handling room for Y turret, which is the one furthest aft on the ship. And the first torpedo hit up forward. And of course there was a tremendous jolt. The lights all sort of blink on and off there was a bit of speculation as to what that was, you know. We hadn't experienced torpedoes, of course, and all we could think of was it must have been an enormous shell that pushed the ship around to that extent. You know, that was a whop or whatever it was. You could feel the ship slow down. You know, there was quite a bit of slowing in the ship because that had taken one of the the most forward of the compartments, engine compartments out. So of course it slowed the ship down. Of course under those circumstances where you're in a fairly confined space and there's searchlights putting you on the spot, then of course you want every bit of speed you can cram on, but of course we didn't have it, and that was when things really started to go wrong, when we got another torpedo, and that was when we got the order. It was time to get out.